Today, debt crisis? What debt crisis?
Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Michael Pascoe has penned an article in the New Daily, which attempts to bring some balance to the discussion of the severity of household debt in Australia. In fact, he's pretty rude about the so-called doom and gloom merchants. So today we look at his arguments, and I've put a link to his article in the comments below. And by the way, if you value the content we produce, please do consider our Patreon program, where you can support our ability to continue to make great content. And here is the link, and it's also in the comments below. Pascoe accepts that Australia's level of gross household debt as a percentage of disposable income is indeed very high and at record levels, and among the world's very worst. He pulls out the standard RBA chart and observes the way the RBA now pairs this debt graph with housing prices and suggests that that points a clear finger at what they think is to blame. Then he goes on to explore the difference between our gross and net household debt and cites a chart from the CBA which shows that household net debt, that's loans minus what we've on deposit and in cash, actually peaked a dozen years ago, came off a little, and hasn't done all that much since. Owner-occupiers and investors alike see the sense of parking every spare cent in an offset account to reduce their interest payments. As he points out, especially if owner-occupiers with a mortgage, the offset account makes a great deal of sense. The interest saved is the equivalent of a very respectable after-tax return on the money. It helps pay down the mortgage a bit faster, and it provides nice flexibility to have cash available if it's required. Then he turns to serviceability and rolls out an old chart from the RBA. What this graph shows is that while our gross debt has soared, what it costs us in interest as a percentage of household disposable income is about as low as it's been in 14 years. In fact, the latest data from the RBA, which shows the ratio of household interest payments to income and housing payments to income, are both rising thanks to higher interest rates and larger loans. But he concludes that the RBA and APRA were a little late in applying the brakes on the housing boom, cooling the wilder lending, but it has now done so. And it looks like the market is having, to quote, a soft landing. And while some have an issue with debt, it's not as simple an Armageddon as the scaremongers would like you to think, he says. Sound of spooked horses being calmed, the RBA would be most grateful. And good on him for not just following the herd on this one, because the debt footprint is way more complex than some would like to admit. The fact is, averaging data tells us very little. For example, the RBA chart showing 190 debt to income includes all households, including those without debt. So the ratio is higher for those with big debts. The RBA series does not show this. Second, you have to look at individual households and their finances. This is, of course, what we do in our surveys, alongside detail of their overall assets and net worth. And you have to take account of all income and expenditure, not just mortgage debt repayments, in the context of flat incomes and rising costs. A brief segue here, as the ABS published their latest CPI figures for June, and it rose 0.4% in the June quarter, according to the latest data. This follows a rise of 0.4% in the March quarter. The most significant price rises this quarter were automotive fuel up 6.9%, medical and hospital services up 3.1%, and tobacco up 2.9%. These rises were partially offset by falls in domestic holiday travel and accommodation down 2.7%, motor vehicles down 2%, and vegetables down 2.9%. In annual terms, transport rose 5.2%, and tobacco rose by 7.8%. The annual rate was 2.1%, having increased 1.9% through the year to March. Most of this annual growth is due to the strength in fuels, electricity, and tobacco. For the June quarter, the all-group annual percentage change across the eight capital cities was 2.1%, Sydney rose 2.1%, Melbourne rose 2.5%, Brisbane rose 1.7%, Adelaide rose 2.7%, Perth rose 1.1%, Hobart rose 2.4%, and Darwin rose 1.2%, and Canberra rose 2.8%. In fact, this is actually quite a weak result. The trimmed mean falls below the lower bounds of the RBA target at 1.9%. Yet, in some categories, households are reporting big rises in costs of living. Electricity, fuel, healthcare costs, for example, are all bearing down. And frankly, the CPI seems disconnected from the real life experience of many. Costs are still outpacing income growth for many households. So net-net, they are still going backwards. This comes through in spades in our survey data. So now back to those surveys, which includes a consideration of net debt, offset accounts, and other expenditure. In fact, we construct a balance sheet for each household in our model to get the complete picture, looking beyond the mortgage repayments. And yes, many are doing just fine, even if many of those assets are in inflated housing or superannuation, which is locked away. But it is the marginal borrower who is under the gun now. Even at rock-bottom interest rates and banking lending standards are a lot tighter too, so around 40% of households are having trouble getting a refinance. Plus, we do have problems with some interest-only loans, especially where the borrower is a serial leveraged investor with a significant number of properties. Then, of course, there is the question of whether employment rates will rise or fall and the quality of new jobs on offer. As a piece in The Conversation today showed, many jobs are jobs created in the female-dominated health and education service sector, and they're driving both full-time and part-time employment growth in Australia. And some of these will be less well paid. So if you look at the chart for all households and total debt repayments as a ratio of income at the current time, we get an interesting picture. This includes households with a mortgage, those who own property outright, and those renting. In fact, many have no debt. That's around one third of all households. For those borrowing, debt can include mortgages, both owner-occupied and investor loans, personal loans, credit cards, and other consumer finance. We do not include business lending in our numbers. Many have commitments which require less than 20% of household incomes from all sources, but others have much higher debt servicing requirements, and a few are through the 100% barrier, meaning all income is going to repay debt. Not pretty. In some cases, this has been triggered by changes in personal circumstances. But if you boil it back to owner-occupied mortgage borrowers, then our data suggests that around 30% have little wriggle room at current levels. Even small rises would be concerning. And that is precisely what our mortgage stress analysis is all about. And you can see our most recent results in our post, "The Debt Pips Are Squeaking." And here is the link, and it's also in the comments section below. At the end of the day, it will be the marginal borrower who has the potential to trigger issues down the track, as happened in the USA post the GFC. And we have close to 1 million borrowing households in this precarious state. But it's certainly not an all or nothing picture. Granularity is your friend. But the debt burden should not be explained away, because for many households, it's the reality of everyday life. The days of easy credit have passed, but the debt hangover will live with us for a generation. As always, if you like what you've heard here today, please share and like the post and add a comment or question. And if you want to join the growing band of subscribers who receive alerts when we release new posts, do subscribe now. I'm Martin North, the Principal Analyst at Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again next time.